Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
All right, Abby, thank you very much. Sports Beat continues, 5:34 on this Monday. Blue Gold game on Saturday. Notre Dame reported the attendance at 37,000 on a day in which the temperatures snuck up into the mid-40s with a stiff wind. So credit to all the fans that came out to the ball game at Notre Dame Stadium. We had fun calling it here on WSBT Radio. You heard my opening thoughts of the Blue Gold game. Now let's bring in the voice of Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Of course, you can read all his work daily at blueandgold.com, and he joins me every Monday to talk Notre Dame football, and this is a very important Monday because it is the Monday after the Blue Gold game, arguably the biggest day on the offseason calendar. All right, Tyler, let's begin with the quarterback position. Was there a loser on Saturday, or did all the quarterbacks win?
How did I know that we were going to start here, Darren? How did I know? Was there a loser? I think everybody won, and that's including Riley Leonard, because in these things, we've seen it. I mean, Tyler Buchner last year, Drew Pine 2 years ago, two guys that had chances to start in the last couple of seasons at Notre Dame, just kind of destroy their stock in those games. I mean, Tyler Buchner was in the portal just a few days after he went, I believe it was 8 of 18 for less than 50 yards and an interception last year. Drew Pine, remember when he played for both teams a couple of seasons ago? That was the offseason where it was him and Tyler Buchner kind of battling it out to be the starter. And as soon as he just kind of really had a no-show performance in that Blue Gold game, he was pretty much out of the race at that point. I think everybody knew that Tyler Buchner was going to be the starter going into Ohio State that season. So all of that to say, somehow this time, and I wrote before the game in my final thoughts column, that all eyes were going to be on the quarterback, and usually something crazy happens, and we're going to be talking about, you know, somebody didn't play well or somebody did this. This time, we're talking about how everyone played well, and we don't have to talk about how Riley Leonard didn't play well because he didn't play. All three guys that did play, I thought, played fantastically. Yeah, there was a couple of mistakes here and there. C.J. Carr probably should have thrown an interception. Kenny Minchie did throw an interception. Steve Angeli missed a couple open passes. But by and large, when you look at the statistics that all these guys put forth and just – kind of the way that they controlled the game, got the offense up and down the field, scored points. I mean, Darren, a couple of years ago, this was a 13-10 game in the Blue Gold game. Last year, one of the teams didn't even score. It was 24-0. But this time, you had every single quarterback go in and orchestrate at least one touchdown drive. We saw C.J. Carr do it for both teams. That was really impressive. But I think everybody in that quarterback room was a winner, and that kind of goes along with the theme of the way that we've been presenting this the entire offseason. This is one of Notre Dame's most impressive, talented quarterback rooms, top to bottom, in a very long time, and they kind of showed it on Saturday.
Tyler, you're right. Kenny Minchie threw a ball up for grabs. It got intercepted. C.J. Carr threw a ball up for grabs. He was under pressure. It did not get intercepted. So both players put the ball up for grabs in the game, but otherwise, I thought Minchie got better as the game went on. And I tell you what, Tyler, I thought C.J. Carr was in complete control of the offense, and the touchdown throw to Gilbert and the across-the-field out pattern to Gilbert, those two throws really caught my attention. Was C.J. Carr the C.J. Carr you expected to see, or was he a tad bit better? How do you analyze him?
I would say he was a tad bit better, and okay. I was really worried for him from the moment that Marcus Freeman on Thursday during that draft said C.J. Carr is going to play for both teams. I've already said this 2 minutes ago in the conversation, that when Drew Pine had to do that, it was just so tough. But Drew Pine was playing both ways, and he didn't really have a stop. I think that was his hindrance. CJ Carr played for both teams in this one, but he kind of got a break because for a while there, Kenny Minchie was solely playing for the gold team, and Steve Angeli was mostly playing for the blue team. I think CJ Carr, when he's standing on the sideline in those situations, he's basically doing the Riley Leonard like we saw behind the plane. He's just internalizing. He's a really smart kid. And then he goes in there and just kind of plays his game. Yeah, he's watching these reps from Angeli and Minchie, but he goes in there and you could tell that he's his own dude. And like you said, he makes some of these throws that are distinctly CJ Carr. Like Steve Angeli wasn't making these throws. Kenny Minchie, the gunslinger that he's been termed and dubbed in spring practice, he wasn't even making those throws. So it was the throws that you mentioned. I think there was even one, a completion to Jack Larson that was really impressive. And then also an incompletion where it was kind of like the C.J. Stroud throw, and look what C.J. Stroud has done in the NFL. But you remember that throw that he made in Columbus a couple of years ago, Darren, where C.J. Stroud just kind of pranced along and got to the sideline, and then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this guy ever going to throw it? And when he does, is there any chance that it's going to be on target? He completed that ball. C.J. Carr kind of did the same thing on Saturday, and it ended up being an incomplete pass, but it was really more of a drop by the tight end than anything. But he put that ball right on the money. It's plays like that, Darren, where I'm sitting there going, okay, he's got a little bit of an it factor to his game.
We're talking Notre Dame football, in particular the Blue Gold game with Ty LaHorka from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Two receivers that I really thought helped themselves. Micah Gilbert trying to push his way up the depth chart, and Deion Colsey, a veteran guy, trying not to get lapped by the competition. I felt like both of those guys helped themselves. How would you evaluate those two?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to have a good problem on its hand, and this isn't unique to the boundary position. Just imagine when Jordan Faison gets back, and he's going to be battling with Jaden Greathouse. But at that boundary spot, I mean, when you have Jaden Thomas healthy, he's primarily played boundary the last couple of seasons. Deion Colsey pretty much exclusively plays the boundary. And Micah Gilbert has been playing a lot of boundary this spring as well. You mentioned it. I mean, they were on separate teams. Deion Colsey doing really good things for the blue team, Gilbert doing really good things for the gold team. At some point, you know, you're all going to be on the same team, and you're going to have to try to funnel those reps. But like I said, that's a good problem to have, because Colsey really set the tone in that game. I thought he was physical, even on the CJ Carr pass that we mentioned. I mean, he made a heck of a play to bat that thing out of Christian Gray's hands, and that's not easy to do. When Christian Gray gets his hands on the ball, he usually comes down with it. Very good cornerback. So, Colsey looked healthy. I think that was a big thing. And when he's healthy, he's more aggressive. He can be a little bit more himself. And then Micah Gilbert, that's the Micah Gilbert that we've seen all spring. I know I've pumped him up quite a bit on this show and at blueandgold.com for sure. So, for his size, I mean, he's only 6'2", but he's every bit of about 215 pounds, I would say. That's a really good size for a boundary wide receiver if you want to mix in speed and physicality. But then he's also just a really good route runner. And you're asking, okay, how did he get so wide open on both of those passes, both of those touchdowns that he caught? Just runs a really good route. And then we'll bring it back to how we started this conversation. Notre Dame's got a couple really good quarterbacks to put the ball on him. I think it was Minchie that threw the first one. And then CJ Carr with a really nice touchdown over the top of the corner and the crashing safety on the second one. But, yeah, to your point, two really good wide receivers that, when healthy, are going to be battling each other for reps this fall.
Running back room, Price and Young were not on display in this particular game. You had the offensive line broken up. So I think you have to take some things that happened with the offensive line with a grain of salt. But was there anybody amongst the running backs that really caught your eye showing what they offered to the fan base on Saturday?
Yeah, I'll just get the obvious out of the way, because I think we've known what this kid can do for the last year since he's been here. And Jeremiah Love is an absolute stud. The catch that he made was really his best play. I think it went for 30, 40 yards, something like that, broke a few tackles, working his way from the left side of the field to the right side of the field. I mean, dude just has vision. He has a feel for the game, knows where he needs to get. Obviously, he scored a touchdown on the ground as well. But Aeneas Williams, I think, reminds me a lot of Kyren Williams. And this running back room is so loaded that we might not see a whole lot of him this fall. But just give him some time, because pretty soon, guys like Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love, they're going to be gone and out. And we could be talking about Aeneas Williams as, like I said, a Kyren Williams type He just looks like that little scrappy bulldog, a little bit undersized, but what he lacks in height and just overall stature, he makes up for in really a unique build. I mean, you see the size of this biceps, and I actually have a blue and gold illustrated cover on my wall. It's one of the first magazines that I was ever in when I got here 3 years ago now, and it's a Kyren Williams cover. And everyone talks about how small he was, but, you know, he's flexing in this picture that's on my wall, and you could just see, like, he makes up for it, and he's scrappy in that way. I think Aeneas Williams is the same way. You don't see a lot of guys that size break tackles, but these are the type of running backs that just work their tails off to get to a point that you say, okay, maybe I'm only 5'10", but I'm going to be strong enough in the, you know, below the waist, and I'm going to do enough bicep curls and whatever it is to be able to break that tackle. And we saw Aeneas Williams break some tackles on Saturday, and I think that might have kind of turned some heads and raised some eyebrows, because you're talking about a fan base that knows who Jeremiah Love is and knows who Jadarian Price is used to Audric Estime the last couple of seasons. But, you know, when number 20 got into the end zone on Saturday and did some good things with the rest of his opportunities, I think the fan base started thinking, okay, here we go. Maybe we have another one of these guys that just comes out here and just kind of announces himself to the Notre Dame fan base.
Speaking of Notre Dame fans, they've been waiting for these young linebackers to get out on the field. Tyler, Osbury in the slot covering Greathouse with a pass breakup, just one of the many eye-popping plays those young guys made on Saturday. They did not disappoint.
Yeah, how about, I think a big part of Jaden Greathouse, last year's blue gold game darling, who had, I think, like 11 catches for 118 yards. He just went off, didn't have a catch until the third quarter. And that was primarily because he was lined up across from Jaden Osbury for most of the game, because, you know, slot corners were at a premium in this thing. Jaden Osbury played a lot of football lined up in the slot, and he was fantastic. He's a guy that I'm buying into this notion where Marcus Freeman says you just can't keep him off the field, because we saw that last spring. He just has a nose for the football, gets to it, and on that play in particular, he got to it. And I thought the rest of those linebackers – they kind of had a nose for the football, too. Jalen Sneed popping up all over the place. Drake Bowen knows where he needs to get to. Kingston Viliamu-Asa, how about him breaking up a play on Jaden Greathouse over the middle, where it seemed like he just kind of came out of nowhere. And I was watching the game back, and it was funny. That was within the 2 or 3 minutes that he was on the broadcast. And he's kind of celebrating the throw, and he thinks it's going to be a catch. And then all of a sudden, Kingston comes out of nowhere and breaks the thing up. I kind of wrote this at blueandgold.com. This may not be the most experienced Notre Dame linebacking core. That's going to be the case when you lose a guy like J.D. Bertrand and a guy like Maris Leifau, but it's talented across the board. And I think they can run 5 or 6 guys in there who, no, have not played a lot of football, but yes, have immense talent. And the only way to get that experience is to go out there and do it. And I think Max Bola, Al Golden, they have some guys that they're really confident in that can just go out there and produce right away.
A lot of positives from this game, Tyler. The one hesitation I have coming out of the game is offensive tackle. Where is your thoughts on that group heading into the summer?
Yeah, I'm just as concerned as you are, and probably just as concerned as everyone else that watched this. And there is that caveat. I think that you just mentioned it a couple minutes ago, where the offensive line is mixed and matched and split up, and you didn't see the 5 across the board who had been working together for the entirety of the spring. But at some point, you just have to block the guy that's across from you. And it seemed like RJ Obe and Boubacar Traore, all of these different guys, Jordan Botello, even when he wasn't offside, was just they were just living in the offensive backfield. And that is not very comforting if you're trying to protect a quarterback and presumptively Riley Leonard, who's been dealing with some injury things the last, 8 months now. If that Notre Dame game, he hasn't been 100% right. You've got to keep those guys back there upright, and that's the primary job of an offensive tackle. And too many times I saw those guys get blown right by. And it wasn't just, Tosh Baker, who's been kind of the guy that people have been honing in on, like, okay, is he actually ready to do this? He's a year 5 guy. Can he actually start at Notre Dame? You know, Charles Jagasaw, who everyone has been so high on since he started for the first time in the Sun Bowl, he got run by. I think Sullivan Absher got, handed to him a little bit there. So I agree with you. it's one of those spots on the field where you're not totally sure what you have. But I did write at blueandgold.com today. I was pretty impressed by Emil Wagner. I think he's kind of a guy that's flying under the radar, and I mention it all the time. At this time last year, we thought we knew who the starting five were. It ended up being two spots completely different from what we thought, and that's when Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler stole spots from Billy Shrouth and Andrew Kristofic on the interior at guard. I would not be shocked if it's a role reversal this year, and you know, we think that it's Charles Jagason and Tosh Baker, but Emil Wagner is right there, kind of ready to take the spot from somebody. The issue is we're not quite sure that that's the case, and we're pretty sure that there's nobody else ready to do that. Like, I don't think Soles and Absher is ready to steal a spot from everyone. So it's kind of thin at offensive tackle, Darren, and that's a concern.
Whether it's during the spring watching practice or hearing from Mike Denbrock or watching this game, did you learn anything about Mike Denbrock and this offense over the past month and a half?
Yeah, he's not going to be afraid to spread it out, and you're going to see both running backs and tight ends serving as pass catchers, just pure pass catchers, wide receivers, wide outs, if you will. I think there were multiple empty sets in this game where there were five across the board. And that was, it was glaring to me when I was rewatching this game this morning. And I think it was maybe a 4th-and-2 situation. And Notre Dame did convert on a few fourth downs, which was very impressive against the defense that was very good in 3rd-and-short and 4th-and-short situations last year. Converted, and then all of a sudden they go quickly, and on 1st-and-10 out of a 4th-and-2 conversion, there's five across the board, and they're throwing a little quick one to the tight end. Maybe it was Cooper Flanagan who caught, I think, I want to say like a 12-yard gain or so. There's going to be a lot of that for Notre Dame. Tempo when you wouldn't expect tempo, spreading it out on 1st-and-10 when for the longest time Notre Dame just wanted to run into a loaded box in those situations. So I think to answer your question, it's going to be different. This is the guy who orchestrated and led the number one offense in the country, who just so happened to have a Heisman Trophy winner. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Jaden Daniels didn't look like a Heisman Trophy winner at Arizona State. Mike Denbrock made him one at LSU, and the process helped make him a lot of money because he's going to hear his name here called pretty early on here in a couple nights in Detroit. So, I think you have a guy like Denbrock who just knows what he's doing and makes every little piece of the offense, tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks, everyone is better because they're playing within a system and for a guy that knows what to do, knows how to run offensive football.
Final question for you. Fall camp, 100 days away or so. I'm wondering, at the quarterback position, which do you think will be the best, toughest competition? I'm asking between 1 and 2 or 2 and 3 or 3 and 4. Which do you think might be the most interesting and toughest challenge for one to keep another away from that particular spot?
Yeah, this question might be different in the next 5 to 7 days. We'll just have to see if someone... You know where I'm going with that.
I do.
I like to insinuate, but that's the reality of college football these days. Here's how I'll answer this, Darren. It really seems like that Notre Dame is still, no matter what happened this spring, is just still so set on Riley Leonard being the starter. And maybe a lot of this is truthful to Riley Leonard when he says, when he was taking these ghost reps the last two Saturdays, both in the scrimmage and the Blue Gold game, where he's literally mimicking or, you know, playing the play out for himself behind the line of scrimmage. They say that was for Riley Leonard, but I believe a lot of that is a push from the coaching staff said, hey, if you're healthy enough to do this, we want you to do this because we're trying to groom you to be the starter. So I'm hesitant to say that the biggest competition is between 1 and 2, because I really think if he's healthy enough to go out there on August 31st, it's going to be Riley Leonard at number one. So I've probably got to say 2 and 3, because that could change, like I said, in the next 5 to 7 days where you only have 3. But even if there is still four around, I'm not so certain you know for sure who number two is anymore. And that's not taking anything away from Steve Angeli. That's just saying, holy cow, Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr looked really, really good on Saturday. And I don't want to take anything away from Kenny Minchie. First of all, I kind of want to focus on him for a second, because I thought he did some things with his legs that Steve Angeli probably can't do. And even CJ Carr, who's mobile and showed that he can throw on the run, I don't know if he can run like Kenny Minchie did. So three really good guys right there, and I think any of them could be a number two. So when I'm answering your question, well, really any of them could be a number one probably, yeah, as well. But like I said, I think Riley Leonard is that, for the way that Notre Dame's been setting up this year. But come fall camp, if all four of these guys are still around, you're going to have a lot of questions sorting out that order, because like I said, one of them could be a two. And to some people, I've seen it more and more on the blueandgold.com message board. There was literally a thread asking, why did Notre Dame go get Riley Leonard if this is the way these other three guys look? So that's a good spot to be in if you're seeing it through that lens, because you got four really good guys.
All right, more Blue Gold coverage coming up this week at Blue and Gold, and I would assume NFL draft coverage also comes into play.
Oh, yeah, ton of NFL draft coverage. Definitely go to blueandgold.com even before Thursday for some of that preview type of stuff. And then we're going to be wrapping up spring ball, because we're so Blue and Gold game focused right now, as we should be. Like you said at the beginning of all this, it's one of the most important off-season days for any football program's calendar. But we're going to take some time this week to also just kind of wrap up the spring in totality and go all the way back to March 7th, which feels like 3 months ago, even though it was only a month and a half ago, and just kind of absorb everything that we saw for the better month of the last, the better part of the last month and a half. So a lot of Blue Gold game stuff, a lot of spring football stuff, and then, like you said, NFL draft, all at blueandgold.com.
Tyler will be writing Notre Dame football stories while he's watching the Dallas Stars in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. So good luck to your team, and really good insight tonight on a very interesting day at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, this is the time of year that I don't get much sleep, Darren.
I know.
When the Stars are playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because they're always playing these Western Conference teams. But, hey, this is what we live for. And
yep,
we got a nice – I'll plug that, too. We got a nice community of hockey fans at blueandgold.com, too. So sign up, get with us, and there's a whole entire 2024 NHL playoffs thread on there that's been a lot of fun already. So can't wait to follow that throughout the rest of this.
Enjoy your evening. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. See you, Darren.
Thank you. Tyler Horka, Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated. Again, the website to check out his work is blueandgold.com. 56 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.